Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where I turn product managers into product masters. If you haven't heard about my Product Mastery Roadmap for product managers, please check it out. The roadmap guides product managers to become product masters, showing them the path to doubling and more their product success rate. If you are a product manager that wants to create products customers love and want, have more influence in product strategy, and stop being overwhelmed, you'll want this roadmap. Get it for free at theeverydayinnovator.com. My guest today is the Vice President of Innovation and Emerging Technology at Ingersoll Rand. And by the way, Ingersoll Rand is number 9 for innovation in Fortune's Most Admired Companies 2015. And this year is the first year they have made the list for innovation. He has led innovation at several companies, helping more than 40 technology-based products come to market. This includes serving as the VP of Innovation for Eaton Corporation and the VP and Chief Technology Officer at Siemens Technology to Business Center. His name is Michael Winblatt. And throughout these roles, he has learned a great deal about helping companies become more innovative and specifically how to create a culture that breeds innovation. To get the show notes for the discussion, go to theeverydayinnovator.com/056. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Michael, thanks for joining me today and the Everyday Innovators that are listening to us.
Hi, Chad. Thanks for having me on.
So your role is the VP of Innovation and Emerging Technology at Ingersoll Rand. What's your responsibilities in that role?
Well, I think you can divide it into two buckets. The main job is to try to build the innovation capability of the whole organization. So that means developing processes and tools and methods. I'm responsible for training, building training programs, and I personally do a lot of that training. And then also talent development of the key folks who are involved in mm-hmm. innovation. And then it's one thing to have all these methods and tools, but I also have a team to try to really role model and demonstrate what good looks like, how to apply those tools and methods and really do some innovation, create some new products, new services to grow the business.
Very good. And, you know, this seems to be the year that people are creating innovation groups if they don't have them already inside medium and large companies. So I'm seeing this more often. But how long has that role been around in your organization?
I've been in this role for about 3.5 years, and the role was created when I joined the company.
Okay. And what was going on to bring that into existence?
Well, the company's been undergoing a transformation where we've been trying to go from a traditionally diversified company where the businesses were very independent of one another to a company where we're really taking advantage of the synergies between the businesses through a business operating system. Okay. And so we're creating functional expertise around a lot of different areas, human resources and engineering and operations, and innovation was one of those.
Well, apparently your efforts are working, as I shared in the introduction, that you've been recognized in Fortune's Most Admired Companies. So something is working there for sure.
Yeah, we're really proud of that. Ingersoll Rand is often on the list of most admired companies, but that's the first time that we've been on the list for innovation. And right up there with some of the famous innovative companies like Apple and Google and others.
It's not a bad list to be in the top 10 of.
No, we're pleased.
Very good. So at a conference recently called the Backend of Innovation, you spoke on creating an innovative culture inside organizations. This is actually something that you do know a lot about because you've done it in at least 3 large industrial companies. So it's probably kind of part of your DNA, I suspect, now. What does it mean to have that culture of innovation? This is a term that's come up a lot this year, fostering a culture of innovation. What does that mean?
Well, I guess if you think about culture, is what we do, right? Culture is how the company behaves and what we do. Then I think maybe to have an innovative culture or a culture of innovation is really about 3 things. One is that your leadership is aggressively promoting the idea that you should identify new ideas, that they see new things is an important part of the business. And then the second is that resources actually get prioritized for those kind of groundbreaking opportunities. And maybe the third thing is that your employees prefer to join the teams that are working on those game-changing kind of topics. So if the leadership is pulling for new ideas and the employees want to work on new ideas and resources are prioritized for those big opportunities, then you really have that culture of innovation.
Okay. And that last one, is that really about employees being empowered to kind of self-select the projects they want to work on when it comes to innovation?
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it, right? So employees getting involved. But I think it's also just the culture that that's what they want to do, given the choice. That's right. Where, you know, where they would lean.
Yeah, because inside some companies, employees, you know, we start down this path of wanting to be more innovative as an organization, and employees are encouraged to do so. But then they don't really have a way to follow through on that, right? Because the organization, the leadership isn't promoting it to the extent that they really are saying they want to, and the resources aren't getting prioritized. So I see how the pieces work together in an important way.
Exactly. If you're missing any one of those three, then you probably aren't going to get too far.
You're not really serious about a culture of innovation.
Or at least you don't have one yet.
Right. Need to get there. So how do we get there? You talked through at the Innovation Conference a series of steps to make this happen. Take us through that. Where do we start?
Well, I'm a computer scientist by training, so I always start with step zero, right? We number from zero.
We should make good use of zero. It is part of the number line. Why not?
There you go. But you have to think about the foundation, right? And I think the first part of the foundation is setting expectations that the kind of culture that I just described, if you have it already, it's great, then you don't need to follow the steps. But if you don't have it, it's going to take a while to get there. And it's a multi-year journey. When I say multi-year, I don't mean 2 years. It's going to take a number of years. And the expectations have to be clear that we're in this for the long run. And because this is a multi-year journey, it's really important to have strong support from the leadership, that the leadership says, this is an important change that we're trying to make, and we're in it for the long haul. And that's kind of your step zero foundation.
Okay. So it's really setting the expectations, and that no matter what kind of change you're trying to make inside an organization when it comes to culture, this is not something that happens overnight. You know, culture takes a while to push on.
That's right. And I can give a nice example of that. And one of the companies that I was in previously, you know, we started a new innovation group. And during the first 3 years of this kind of transformation, you know, we didn't really have a lot of success. Of course, we had some success on paper, some things we could point to that we'd done well, but we weren't having a huge impact. In the next 3 years, we actually started to produce some pretty good cases, but they were still kind of ad hoc. And finally, in the last 3 years, we were really able to, on a sustained basis, create consistent business impact. So we'd be able to say, you know, at the beginning of the year, this year we're going to create 6 new innovative businesses. I'm not sure what they are yet, but we're going to apply our method. And sure enough, at the end of the year, we'd deliver 6, or being good corporate guys, we'd deliver 7. The funny thing about that story is that group, we actually had an audit in year 4. And in year 4, they decided that we'd just produced enough return on the investment that they'd put in that it made sense and that we should keep going. If they had done that audit in year 3, we probably wouldn't have made it. And then they would have lost out on those last 3 years of really consistent impact to the business.
You know, so that investment had to be made, but how worthwhile to get to the point where you really have the confidence as an organization that you can go out and build that many new businesses in such a short time frame? That is a significant change of the culture to build that kind of confidence and have the tools and processes in place to support it.
But it took a while to get there.
Exactly, right? And as you said, it could have been pulled out. The rug could have been pulled out from under you if that audit was done just a little bit earlier. So it's a good reminder that this is a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. Good. So we have the foundation set in place, and you called that actually step zero. And so now we must be at step one.
That's right. Well, I think the first real step is to get your innovation process in place. That if you want people to innovate, then you need a methodology for them to know how to do that. And there's all kinds of research that says that any innovation process is better than none, and a good one is better than a bad one. So so that's pretty critical. And one element of that that I would highlight as a culture change is what I call standardizing the antidote. So if you think about your business and you say, well, you know, what are some of the real barriers that are preventing us from innovating today? Pick one or two of those that are really critical and make doing the opposite the standard in the company so that everyone's required at least to fix that one problem as they're working through that innovation process.
What's an example of that for us?
So in one of the companies that I worked in, one of the standard failure modes was that technology was overweighted in terms of its importance compared to developing a business case. So they kind of got in love with their cool technology and developing the customer feedback and the market opportunity, and that was sometimes not done as correctly as it should have been. So we made part of the standard work that you had to create a commercial hypothesis as a very early step in the process. You weren't allowed to invest dramatically in technology until you're able to say, who's the customer and what's the problem that we're solving and what's the market opportunity for that? And just by putting in that one step, saying, okay, you can't go to your failure mode until you've done this one thing, we were able to get a lot of change in the way that people approach innovation and overcome that particular problem to a significant extent.
So it is setting up that innovation process in the step one, but also recognizing where the weakest parts of that are going to be for the organization, right? So in that example, you know, part of your process, I'm sure, was some kind of business case, you know, and idea selection type process. And in that example, it was they got started on the technology even before having a business case that people believed in.
That's exactly right. And to your point, not every company has the same failure modes or the same barriers. So you have to think a little bit about what's important in your company that you really want to focus on as that antidote that you're going to standardize.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it doesn't make any sense to make one element really strong, right? Like maybe we are really good at technology. We know how to develop and we know how to break through problems we run into. And, you know, build that up really strong when we don't know how to get ideas, right? We don't know what the next breakthrough idea is going to be. And the whole thing has to be made at a reasonable level of competence for it to be effective.
Exactly.
Cool. So step one then is getting those processes in place and standardizing the antidote, you said, right?
And so That's right.
Must bring us to step two.
Yeah, exactly. So step two, you could think of as sort of building the army, right? So before you're going to get very far, you're gonna need some examples of success, right? You're gonna be able to show some wins, and you could think of that for your army. That's sort of your ammunition, right? To hey, this is why we're doing this. This is a demonstration of what we're trying to accomplish. But just because you've deployed a new process doesn't mean that everybody in your organization is going to be very skilled at it. So you need soldiers for your army. You need to train or hire some specialists, some folks who really understand the process and can hit the ground running. And in a very short order, get to some of those success cases. So, you know, kind of the specialists are the soldiers, and the success examples become their ammunition.
And what's your experience been with that in terms of the specialists? Have you had examples where you've been able to identify people inside the company that can contribute in that role? Or do you really find that you need to bring in, you know, in a sense, new blood and new thinking and hire in for this?
Well, I've had a lot of success with both. So we found internal people who had an interest or an aptitude, and we brought in people from the outside. I think that the key thing there is, you know, you think about what's the difference between inexperience and experience. The difference is practice, right?
Right.
And in business, we don't usually get a lot of time to practice because we're too busy doing the real work. You know, think about playing a musical instrument or playing a sport. You know, you spend much more of your time practicing than you do doing the real work.
Right.
So when we're training up this innovation army, this innovation force, the thing that we really focus on is getting repetitions. What's the fastest way that you can get lots of examples? We use case studies, simulations, role plays, real projects, but short projects as a method for getting those repetitions in so that people can get practice. And they need practice in the both using the process, but also in the content, you know, the voice of the customer and market sizing and competitive analysis and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do hire externally, then you want to look for people who have those repetitions, right? And ideally also look for people who have some success.
And as part of the second step, it sounds like that also involves demonstrating to the organization where the successes are. So you can get some of these early wins and you can start getting people seeing the successes that the Army is creating. Is that part of the step?
Yeah. In fact, you're leading me actually to the next step, which is creating some transparency around what's going on. And one of the important things there is getting recognition for the folks in the organization who are doing the right things. So getting recognition, for example, for your success cases. And part of that is to recognize the individuals so they're getting credit for it. But part of that is also to show everybody, this is what good looks like. And this is the kind of thing that we want you to do.
So you're highlighting what was done well and in the context of the successful projects.
Exactly.
They did. And how have you seen that being communicated effectively? And I ask this because I know in organizations, especially when this is new, right, we're still on the journey to trying to create this culture of innovation, that people might, get something in an email, they might get something that comes through in some memo or something that they ignore basically, right? It's like, okay, I don't even know what that is and it's not on my radar, I don't care about it. So how do you actually let the organization know? Is this a town hall meeting where you demonstrate the outcome of the project or what do you think we should do?
Yeah, so good question. In Ingersoll Rand, for example, we have a variety of awards, President's Awards and Chairman's Awards that we give out for innovation and also for other things. And the people are recognized. Sure, there are some emails that go out, but they're also recognized at town hall and leadership conferences. And then we've even gone a step further in some of our leadership conferences to actually put some of the folks up on stage and have them talk about their experiences and give them recognition that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's real good for recognizing the people involved. And I expect that these would be good cases to kind of dissect the project and what happened on that project as training tools too, to understand, how are we learning to do innovation in this organization? Have you seen that done? Do you do that?
Yeah. We have a program which we call the Innovation Masters Program. And that's one of the ones I mentioned where we're trying to get a lot of repetitions. So one of the ways that we get repetitions is to use some of these successful and also unsuccessful projects as case studies, right? So the folks who did the work present it, and then the students kind of take it apart.
And you mentioned unsuccessful projects, which I always like to highlight, because for some reason, when we do something that's not successful, there's more pain involved, whether it's real pain or pain that we make up in our minds. And we tend to learn from those experiences, I think, more powerful lessons than the successful instances at times in our life. Do you have an example of something that the organization learned, the people involved learned from one of the projects that was a success?
Yeah, so I think I can give you an example without giving you the exact project details. Nobody wants to air their dirty laundry.
Sure.
But we had a project where we were developing a new product, and it was pretty clear that it had been driven entirely from the engineering team. They had developed something that they thought would make a good new product, and they'd come up with a bunch of features, and they'd come up with a bunch of technologies to implement those features. But what they really hadn't done was the voice of the customer to understand whether this was something that people would really want to buy, or even they had done a little bit of that, but they hadn't taken it down to the level of the value proposition. How do the customers value each of these different features? And then as a result, how might we be able to price that? And so by presenting that example in the class, the students picked up on that very quickly, and we had a good discussion about how you want can avoid that in your own projects.
It's a really good example. It reminds me of what we've been seeing going on with the lean startup kind of movement and making sure that we know what customers want, what job they want our product to accomplish for them. And in my space of product management, this comes up even among the modern lean practitioners, that from our perspective of being the product managers involved, we might get half of the feature set, right? Half of what the user needs in terms of benefits. And we typically are not good at picking what that half is.
Yeah, that's right.
We need to have the customers involved to really understand what provides them value.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
And as a former, I don't know if you can be a former electrical engineer, you know, from an engineering background, I felt like we always had the solution. You know, engineers are the one thing that we're good at. We're trained to solve problems. And so give us a problem, we'll tackle it for sure. But we're typically, in most of the time in engineering, we're not developing products for ourselves. And we're not the actual customer, even though we might have some cool ideas.
And I try to be pretty agnostic about which you do first, right? Because there's many innovations that did come from the science side.
Absolutely.
And there are many innovations that came from a pull from a clear need in the marketplace. And I think in the end, you really need both, right? You need a clear understanding of the customer's needs, and you need a differentiated solution. And as long as you get to a point where you have both of those fairly early, it probably doesn't matter too much which one you start with.
Yeah, and I think an element of that, especially in organizations of your size, is having some way of making those connections happen, because there's no doubt good engineering that's been done that's sitting on a shelf somewhere because it didn't have a fit yet, right? And there's going to be a problem that comes up sometime, and if the right person finds out, they're going to be able to say, hey, we already have a solution for that. Let's bring that in. And it's making those connections that are so important.
And that's a faster way to do innovation, because a lot of the work you may have finished previously.
So that was, then I led you into what must have been step three, creating transparency and providing recognition for those involved and recognition of the projects and helping people see what successes we have going on in their organization.
And there's another half of that, which is the metrics that go along with it. So most companies today they understand the importance of tracking metrics, right? And having some metrics around innovation is also important. One of the things that I promote is the idea that the metrics should evolve with the maturity of your transformation. So, you know, if you start on the first day with the business impact of your innovations, but you haven't even figured out how to innovate well, then you're probably not going to be able to have much to track. Right, but what you can start with our simpler metrics, like metrics around activity. For example, in one company, we spent some time developing a capability building plan, and then we just tracked whether we were working our way through that plan effectively. Mm-hmm. Then once you've got that in place, then maybe the next stage is tracking progress. So, for example, what are the number of projects that you've got that are progressing past some key threshold, like if you're using a stage gate process, the number of projects that are passing a certain gate. And you say, well, you know, our goal for this quarter or this year is to have a certain number of projects passing that gate. And then when you've got to the point where you're doing that consistently, now we want to start looking at the impact that we're getting. So, for example, the revenue from the products that were actually launched, or if you want a leading indicator for that, what's the net present value of the projects that are passing through the gates? And you can say, so this year I want to have an impact to the business of 100 million or 500 million or whatever it is that's appropriate for your business. And then you can actually track that you're making progress towards that.
I really like how you laid out kind of a ladder approach to metrics. And as we move up this ladder of our experience with this new innovation process and trying to really infuse the innovation into the culture, we're not trying to tackle, you know, because if I go pick up a book on innovation metrics, it's going to have some pretty sophisticated metrics in there, which won't make sense just where we are in this journey of transforming our culture, right? And I liked how you approached this kind of as a ladder perspective. As we get more mature and progress through our journey, we are picking metrics that make sense based on where we are right now with what we know.
That's right. Because if you have metrics that show that you're getting better all the time, mm-hmm. but they have to be metrics that are tracking the things that you're actually getting better at.
And not setting metrics in place that we really just don't have the information yet to even contribute to measure those.
Well, you touch on another point, right, is that you may not have the data. And if you introduce your metrics kind of incrementally, then at the same time, you're also probably improving your data systems and your mm-hmm. data integrity to get to some of those more advanced metrics.
Yeah, exactly. Good. So that's step three.
Right. So step four. So where are you now? You've got your process in place. You've got your army to go and generate some good examples. And you've created some transparency about what's happening. Now the thing is, to get some pull for really big ideas. And there's a lot of ways you can do that. One of them we already talked about is sort of recognizing the people that are achieving those big ideas, because that encourages other people to do that. Mm-hmm. I think another important way is to get your leaders exposed to outside innovations so that they really understand both the opportunities and potentially the threats that are coming from outside, and also to be a little bit inspired by all the interesting stuff that's going on in the marketplace. So we have a bunch of different activities that we do in Ingersoll Rand and also in some of my former companies to just get people exposed to outside ideas.
Can you share an example of what that is?
Yeah, so I'll give one example that we did actually this year. We took our senior leadership team out to Singularity University out in California. Singularity University is a kind of a think tank, and they promote what they call exponential technologies, so things like robotics and artificial intelligence and bioinformatics and things that are changing at a very rapid pace. And they teach about the technologies, but they also put an emphasis on teaching about the business impact of those technologies. And so a lot of their examples are names of companies and startups and bigger companies that are using these technologies, so that the leaders can immediately see, hey, this isn't just technology and research, but there's actually money being made in the market. And they see the opportunities, and sometimes they get inspired by that, and they also see the threats, and maybe that's another way to motivate people as well.
Right. It's an interesting place. I hope to go join Singularity University as a student to see, have this experience myself sometime. In doing this, do you also find like simple things like going to conferences in your industry or adjacent industries helpful for leaders to see, like you said, what the opportunities are and also what threats, just what people are thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, the Singularity University is a kind of a heavyweight example, but there's lots of lighter weight things you can do, both by attending trade shows and conferences, but also inviting speakers in. So we routinely invite in speakers from our industry, from market analysts, from universities and other adjacent places, just to keep a steady flow of ideas coming.
I know I've talked to some organizations where they'll have like their brown bag lunchtime or their coffee time in the morning, or you know, something that they're doing to regularly try to provide these outside ideas, and they do it by inviting an outside guest. Is that a format that seems to fit well into this?
Absolutely. Over the years, I've used that on many occasions, and that works pretty well.
So we're trying to get our leaders to be more exposed to things going on outside the company, which for some people that might sound a little bit silly. But the problem is, I think this happens as employees and leaders of the organizations. Over time, we tend to become internally focused, and it's unfortunately easy to lose touch with customers and competitors and market trends if you're not taking time to pay attention to it.
That's absolutely true. And also, even for leaders who make an effort to expose themselves to the outside, you know, there's only a certain amount of time that they can do that. And so they maybe go to certain customers, they may have certain relationships they've built with certain market analysts or whatever. And a program like this, where you're exposing them to new things and new ideas, is always helpful to kind of stir the pot a little bit.
Have you found pushback, though, as you have worked through organizations putting this in place? Have you found resistance from senior leadership at this point, or are you able to get them on board pretty easily with this idea?
Actually, I would say the opposite. When we hold a workshop and we have a bunch of external speakers, our senior leaders often are excited to come to that. You know, we may not be able to get them to show up for everything we do, but they usually show up for that. Mm-hmm. And they're also pretty encouraging of their teams to attend. So I haven't had a lot of pushback on that.
So this step four is, I think you said, building the pull for the big ideas.
Yeah, and there's probably one important piece there, which is around the goals for the organization, right? So in the end, the reason we do innovation, you know, partly it's for employee engagement, and partly it's for the reputation of the company. But really, the reason we're doing innovation is to grow the business and to be profitable. And if your goals for growth are modest, then it's often possible to achieve those goals without really doing much innovation. But if you set for your team, for your organization, really aspirational goals, then just doing the normal kind of things is not likely to get you there, and you you force them to consider bigger ideas, bigger bets, bigger opportunities.
Right. You're stretching the organization to go a little bit further than people might think about. In these steps, I'll run through them real quick and make sure I got them right. So being the computer scientist, you like to start at step zero. So we'll use step zero, which is setting really putting the foundation in place and setting the expectations that this is a journey. Transforming culture and specifically the innovation culture is going to take some time, and we need commitment from leaders to get that done. And then step one then is setting up the innovation processes. And you talk about standardizing the antidote, looking for our weakest links, so to speak, and strengthening them. Step two was building the army and finding those specialists that will be the soldiers and the ones to lead to those early successes. Step three was creating transparency, which involved recognizing the people involved in these projects. And you gave the example of awards at town halls, and I think the award's a great approach. And then using the lessons learned from the projects themselves as teaching points. And step four was build the pull for the big ideas. And that involved getting leaders to look outside, recognize threats and opportunities, and also setting aspiration goals. Fair summary?
Yeah, very good. I think you got all of it.
Very good. And I'm curious, let's talk for a moment about the reason to go down this path, right? So you told us in the beginning what it means to have a culture of innovation. I know I've been talking to organizations this year that either they already are experiencing flatline growth, and they're concerned about what to do about that, or they're in a place where growth is not an issue for them, but they're very concerned about competitors' actions and maybe the guy in the garage, the startup that's really going to come disrupt things. And so there seems to be these growing factors where, especially the medium to large organizations, are looking at, how do we get out of this, right? And I'm curious just what you're seeing there, and maybe not your company right now, but just in the industry overall, for why companies are taking an interest today looking into this culture of innovation.
I think that there's so many benefits to being good at innovation, right? I mean, so we start with, and we touched on this a little bit before, but we start with the obvious one, that if you have products and services that are highly differentiated and that are targeted to your customers, then not only you're probably going to get good market share in those markets, but you're also probably going to get premium prices. Mm-hmm. And good market share and good margins are what makes for profitable, successful companies. So, I mean, it's pretty basic. But then it goes beyond that. So I was just looking at a study recently of recruiting, and they were saying, well, what kinds of companies do people like to work for who are looking for a job? And the war for talent, obviously, is pretty important. And in 12 out of 14 countries that the report was about, including the United States, the number one thing that employees were looking for were innovative companies. Mm-hmm. Now, I think this particular study was on engineering job applicants, but I think that also goes to other kinds of roles as well. And then you think about the reputation of your company, right? What kind of company do partners want to work with? What kind of company do suppliers get excited about selling to? It's companies that are growing, for one, but that are innovative. There's a cachet that comes with being innovative that buys you a lot over and above just being a successful, profitable company, and maybe that's even good enough just by itself.
So some key points that are about attracting the best people. It's something most companies say they want to do, and we all realize that all companies cannot attract the best people. We have this average issue going on. And then the reputation you want to build, and being able to not only attract the best talent, but prized partner relationships and the reputation in the industry. And it seems like the part of the reason why I'm hearing this so much this year too is organizations recognizing that they need to take action to be more competitive. And like you said, you know, it's the no-brainer to my words. You just say no-brainer, but it's the no-brainer to look at innovation to differentiate yourself, right? To create products actually stand out in the marketplace. But companies have created roadblocks to actually make this happen. Right. This is why the startup is more flexible and agile than the large company, because they don't have that legacy to deal with and the structure and the processes put in place, which takes me back to what you said in the beginning is this is a journey, right? This is a multi-year activity to really change the culture of innovation inside an organization. Cause I'm sure you're not just putting in processes and the things we talk through, but along the way, you're finding that you actually have to maybe change some organizational structure and policies, and some of the scaffolding that's been put in place previously to make this happen. Has that been the case?
Absolutely. I mean, whenever you're in an organizational change, you always look for things that you can do to help yourself be successful, like changing your organizational structure or removing things that may be in the way. But I do think that, you know, if we come back to our original definition, which is just that leaders are pulling for big ideas and that there's resources to support them and that employees are excited about working on them, those things can exist in many different organizational structures. You know, you don't have to have a corporate R&D to make that happen. You don't have to have a business divided into divisions, right? There are lots of different structures that could still support that kind of a culture.
Sure. Yeah, it's a good point. Good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience. You know, many years of doing this inside organizations, and your steps are very clear. And I'm sure Everyday Innovators, you found some really valuable information there about when it comes to influencing a culture for innovation, what steps to take. And as the Everyday Innovators know, when we get towards the end of the interview, I always like to ask for an innovation quote. And Michael, what quote did you bring for us? And tell us also why you chose that one.
Well, I picked a quote. It's an old one. It dates back to the 16th century. It's from Machiavelli's The Prince, and the reason I picked it is, and this will be clear when I read it, that it's just amazing how the problems we face in innovation today haven't changed at all since the 1500s, right? Mm. That just makes me feel like I'm in a good legacy of a challenge that many people have had. So here, I'll read you the quote. Machiavelli says, "There's nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things. For the reformer has enemies in all those who profit by the old order, and only lukewarm defenders in all those who would profit by the new order. This lukewarmness arising partly from the incredulity of mankind, who do not truly believe in anything new until they've had actual experience of it." And I think if it was true in 1513, it's probably true today.
You know, there is this nature of innovation that if we have people, if we're doing something innovative, then we know it because there are going to be lots of people telling us that can't be done.
That's true.
Right. And I like what it said about the only lukewarm defenders of those who would profit by the new order, right? It's hard to find support in the beginning when you're trying to do something new.
That's exactly it.
Very good. Well, Michael, I appreciate you sharing that quote with us, and I appreciate your time and going through those steps to really help an organization build or deepen their culture of innovation. Thank you so much.
Chad, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Everyday Innovators, I so appreciate you listening. It means so much to me when you recommend this podcast to other product managers and innovators. We really just have a few resources like this for product managers, and please keep telling your colleagues about it. By going to theeverydayinnovator.com/056, you'll find the show notes and the details of the discussion with Michael. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.